And record. Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have Dr. Lonnie Morris, certified nurse midwife that's been practicing since 1975. I've been very excited. Just the little bit we start chatting, I was like, I need to stop you and try not to be rude, but you have so much knowledge that we need to put on the recording. So, Lonnie, thank you so much for your precious time today.
You're very, very welcome. It's
Yeah.
fun to tell your story because you look back. I have it all written down on paper and I say, oh my goodness, I must have been crazy now.
You've done a lot. It shows what kind of character and your passion towards midwifery. I loved it how you had to go print your resume off so we can make sure we count for all your accomplishments.
Well, I've lived by the motto that when the mission is pure, you have to leave the rest up to God. And things have always worked out. So
They do. They do.
the midwifery mission is pure.
Yeah, when your heart's in it and you know you're meant to be here, yeah, there's variations of midwifery, but they all have a very core passion and belief of what we want to do to better the world. So, yes, yeah, so Lonnie is in New Jersey, and we started out just kind of introducing each other, and she has such a wonderful history of how she got going and where things are at. So, Lonnie, if you want to repeat some of the things you had started out saying to me, how you became a midwife and that journey.
Okay, well, I became a midwife as a woman scarred by a birth and a hospital birth. So I gave birth to my first child, and I came away from the birth experience saying there got to be a better way to have a baby. This is not what God intended. So 6 weeks after my baby was born, I went back to school to make up the deficiencies I had on the baccalaureate level so that I could get into a midwifery program, and I had to carry the bag and do public health. I went back in September. My baby was born in January. I started school and I went to Columbia and I graduated from Columbia as a midwife, and I went out to save the world, and I applied to the local hospital for privileges, and they told me I might as well be a witch doctor. At which point I went to incorporate. I went to the state to incorporate as a midwife, and they told me I couldn't. So I got a lawyer and I sued the state of New Jersey for the right to
The
incorporate.
average person would just do that. They most people just give up, but I love it, Lottie, that you're like, I just sued the state.
So now after that, I won. All it took was one letter from the attorney.
Yeah,
So
I might have to work. I'll have to find the right attorney, it sounds like.
I be we got we were granted in 1976, we were granted the right to incorporate. And then the hospital, since the hospital didn't want me, I was working with a doctor who was, he was supportive. He was supportive of midwifery. He was a friend. So he said to me, well, if you wanted to deliver babies that badly, do it in the back of my office. So we took a room in the back of the building. And we converted into a birthing room. So we started my first year of practice. I did 69 deliveries in this birth room, at which point he said, well, maybe we should really make this a birth center. And we put a second room in. And I think we did 129 deliveries the second year. And then the state said, ah, no, you can't do that. You can't be delivering in a doctor's office. So we petitioned the state for licensure, obviously, and we became a pilot and demonstration project for the state health department, at which point we proved that out-of-hospital births was safe, and we helped to write the regulations for birth centers. So we were the first birth center to be started in New Jersey, founded in New Jersey. Yeah. So we were this pilot and demonstration project from 1979 to 1982. And then in we worked. We just worked. And we functioned as a birth center, and I was always kind of an activist. So I testified for Al Gore at a House subcommittee hearing. that the physicians were limiting the practice of midwifery. And so we got known in Congress as, you know, providers that are being limited. And the limitations didn't really stop much, but I did get privileges. I went to see representatives in the state and da 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 da. And I ultimately got privileges at Englewood Hospital, where my doctor was affiliated. And we started doing some in-hospital births, and we would take our transfers to Englewood so that we could take care of them at Englewood. I like to say, and I've said it at conferences, I get thrown out of the best hospitals in the state, because ultimately you can start at a hospital and they don't like the way you dress, or they can say that you don't have great outcomes, or they want the physicians to want the in-house to do more, and it just seems like you get pushed out of a hospital. So we went from Englewood Hospital, we went to the current hospital that I'm practicing now at Pascack Valley Hospital, and we were there for a couple of years, and then we kind of got pushed out of that hospital, and then we went to Holy Name Hospital, you know, which is a Catholic hospital, and then my backup doctor at we changed backup doctors, I don't know, 15 years into practice, 20 years into practice. And my new backup doctor was willing to be backup, but we had to pay him. And we paid him $2,000 a month, and then he raised it to $4,000 a month. And, you know, I couldn't swing it. So we moved to another hospital, and, you know, I've run around from Holy Name. I went to a hospital called Palisades, and I was at Palisades for a bunch of years. And then I went to, after Palisades, I changed back up again. And I went with the Dr. Haddad, who I was with for 15 years. I spent 20 years with one doctor, 15 years with another doctor. It's 35, and there were little guys in between. And now my current situation is that I've been with, we've been covered by the in-house, which is okay, but they don't really get midwifery.
No, it's a band-aid.
So we do some birth center births, but mostly we're doing hospital births. And, you know, the population is sicker now than it was.
Yeah.
And you see more women need to be in hospital.
Right.
They did so many C-sections that you have so many VBACs, and so many women who want to change their birth experiences. They don't want the epidural this time. They really want to trust their body. They really want to trust in birth. But they didn't have the support, and they're seeking the support. And there's more women out there with preeclampsia, with gestational hypertension, diabetes. We're seeing a lot more illness and a lot more need for in-hospital birth.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful. You've got the best of both worlds. You can give the facility, the birth center. How close is the birth center to the hospital?
Far. It's close to the hospital. It's close to Morristown Hospital, but we don't have privileges at that hospital. We're in another county.
Okay.
We're driving 40 minutes to give women birth center births, because there are no birth centers in our area. And since I closed my birth center, right about that time when the malpractice insurance went up so high, it became impossible to afford it.
Yeah. Yeah, we've definitely, when I do like business planning consulting work, because it's very expensive to get a birth center minutes from a major hospital or where you want to get privileges, we tend to do, like you said, that 45 minute hour where maybe there's a small community hospital that's right across the street for emergency, but then you've got your main place you go to when time's on your side. So that's a common strategy across the country.
When am I putting in the plug that I'm looking for midwives?
Please do. You can add that now if you want. I was going to save it for the end, but yeah, she tell about your amazing practice and the structure and what you're looking for. We can definitely talk about that now.
Yeah, I am definitely looking for one or even two midwives to join our practice because we have so many inquiries and so many requests from doctors. Oh, can you come to my office? Can you put a midwife in my office? And they can be convinced to have midwifery practices. Or we can expand into pilot. And we need midwives to increase our numbers because we
Yeah,
can't
there's
handle what we have, and we can't increase if we can't handle what we have. So if you're really interested, call me personally. And I'll be happy to receive resumes, telephone calls, emails. I don't care which way you contact me.
Perfect. Yeah, just after we're done chatting, send me an email with directly your number you want them to connect with, and I'll put it at the bottom and we'll share this lots of places. So, yeah, so right now you're looking for 1 to 2 midwives. You've got 1.5, so plus you, so is it two total if you called it like the budgeting FTE hours?
No, I'm full time.
You're full time. I didn't know how much you did admin. So you're doing full time clinical and then part time admin.
Yeah.
Wow, impressive. So I would love to know, because you started in 1975, like to these young aspiring midwives, what are the goods and bads of the history changes you've seen the last 50 years? I would love to know just that perspective from you.
I think that we fought a lot of fights. I sued Blue Cross and Blue Shield of New York and New Jersey for third-party reimbursement, and I was the first midwife in the state to receive first-party reimbursement. So we are capable of billing all the insurance companies. I worked on the bill in New Jersey to be recognized as full providers and to be the ability to sign the disability and work first papers. I worked on that bill and that was passed. So midwives in New Jersey can sign the death certificate, can sign for unemployment
Handicapped stickers, I mean, things
disability,
that sometimes,
handicapped
yeah.
certificate. Yeah, we got the right to do all of that. But it was work. It was hard work that to, but you can't be afraid to change the law. You can't buckle. My biggest problem with midwives is that they'll buckle and they'll give up the midwifery model because we need them.
Well, I think it's that fear and scarcity of there's not a lot of jobs for midwives, even though there's tons of them out there. People more, they're like, well, I got to live here because of my husband's job or community based. Like, this is where I want to be. So then they're very narrowing. Okay, this is the only place has a job once every 3 years. I've got to adjust my style of midwifery so I can keep this job. And we don't challenge that there's so many. I mean, if you're open to moving, opening to opportunities or starting a private practice, there are other ways. I think too many midwives feel, I don't know how to run a business. I don't see many jobs in my hometown. So when they come up, I better just be what kind of midwife they want me to be.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
When
You
we,
can't,
before
you
we
won't be
started, go
successful
ahead.
if we lose our motto, if we lose who we are, we lose everything.
I was just chatting last week with Barbara Katz Rothman, who has wrote extensive books about the biomedical empire and the system. And she brags very openly. She coined the midwifery model versus medical model and mindset. And she has a lot of concerns about just the last 40 years. We're not going the right direction. And so it was really interesting chatting with her and having people that are seeing it from sociology and different perspectives of midwifery is fighting, but we're not fighting hard enough. So I would love to hear your perspective on that.
Well, and you know, in the movie Orgasmic Birth, I say in Orgasmic Birth, because I have a delivery in there, as well as the the director producer was my client and is still my client, and I delivered her babies, her last one, which got her on her journey. I say, women of Earth, take back your birth. Don't just turn your body over to medicine. Reclaim your power.
Yeah.
And I think that that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
We reclaim our power. And as midwives and as women,
yeah, we're in some interesting times. I try to keep out of the political and the extreme conversations that sometimes people have extreme viewpoints, but we're in a very unique time. I call it more high level, a pivotal moment. Is midwifery going to really thrive, or is this little bit of kindling that's here just going to go out? Because I see an increase in burnout. I see an increase in demand that this tiny little bit of what we are trying to support, we can't even keep up with. You had hinted at that sustaining midwifery. We need to train more midwives, but if we're not getting clinical opportunities where they can see the midwifery model, what are we training them to become?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. One of the things you had brought up, I found very interesting when I said, well, what would be some things you would love to chat about during our conversation? And it really was interesting, the perseverance of supporting midwifery, statistics, talk, like expand on some of these things that you really wanted to touch base today.
I have always had a quality assurance program. I know how many deliveries I have, how many postpartum hemorrhages I've had, how many episiotomies, vaginal lacerations.
Yeah. Everything you can talk about. Yeah, everything you want to learn from. Yeah.
Because statistics count.
Yeah.
And stand up for your statistics.
Yeah.
You know, we are in a hospital now where we have a 6% cesarean section rate. We have a very low hemorrhage rate. We have a very low, you know, readmission rate. We have a very, you know, you can go through everything and you can
stats
say.
Stats you can't argue with and say it's a subjective or fluffier story.
Show me the money. Show me the money. You want to say that midwifery is not safe? Okay, fine. Show me the cases. Where are the cases?
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it is the challenge. Yeah, go ahead, Bonnie.
And also, you know, there's money making going on. You know, you don't know how many fetal anatomy surveys I see that they say, oh, they have to come back for another ultrasound. And the women call me up all hysterical. They're upset. I said, no, honey. If I read this, it says, because of your habitus, maternal habitus, they're recommending repeating it in two
fancy weeks. Word for large belly. So the people on the screen may or may not know what that
means. Yeah, you're a little fat. Okay, I got it. And for that reason, they're recommending growth scans and biophysical profiles every week in the third trimester. And I'm like,
where's the data to support that? Yeah.
Yeah. Where's show me the money, show me the studies, you know, show me why you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a little fat too. And if they give you the excuse of shoulder dystocia, well, 50% of shoulder dystocia occurs in women with small babies.
And growth ultrasounds are highly inaccurate. We were just chatting about that with my last, with some recent births. Like it was actually 2 pounds inaccurate. Like it's
it
like.
Can be plus or minus 2 pounds. Mm-hmm. Excuse me? I mean, I see women that had they weren't even allowed to labor because their baby estimated fetal weight was 9 pounds and the baby
and then it came out seven.
And I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because you want to do evidence. And I mean, ACOG has a position statement about do not give elective C-sections for estimated fetal weights, but then it's still offered. So you always start wondering like, okay, when are we going to pick and choose which data we're going to follow versus, like you said, the financial incentive sometimes. Like I still tell people, it's like hospitals don't want normal, healthy, low risk deliveries because it's a business. They get extra lab testing, they get extra complications, whether it's a business, it's a financial incentive. And that's the rock and hard place when we want to give good quality care and preventative medicine. That's not the industry's model, unfortunately.
Yeah, and like I say to women, this is your ultimate destiny in life. Women mm-hmm. were born to have babies.
Right.
You know, you fulfill your ultimate destiny yeah. by having a baby. And there's, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, women didn't do all these tests.
Yeah.
And they gave birth.
Yep.
And your grandmother yep. had your mother, and your great grandmother had your grandma, and it went on and on. Mm-hmm. So why yep. should what happened that you shouldn't be able to have your baby?
Yeah. Did well, even
shrink.
Yeah, it didn't shrink. My grandmother would always tell the story, half her kids were at home and half were in the hospital. And it had nothing to do with safety. It was the doctor had too many people do, and he just happened to be there. So he said, this time come, and it was nice and easy and convenient for him. And that was the new trend. It had nothing to do with saying, oh, this is a safer place for you because you're going to die at home. It was just a convenience conversion thing. So yeah, people really read the history and really understand where, like, even just the infections in the hospital and the things they used to do in the 1920s. Oh my goodness, just we could go on and on any direction.
Yep.
So Lonnie, one of your awesome stats you said was knowing who we are and like our purpose of midwifery and our midwifery model of care. Can you expand on that phrase you said before we hit the record button?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think you were reinforcing, like, as midwives, we have to be confident. We have to brag. We have to tout ourselves and what midwifery stands for.
Okay. Yeah, I did hit that on that we have to know who we are, appreciate our knowledge base, and appreciate our support for normal birth and our support and our belief in women. And if we lose who we are and proponents of physiological birth and supporting and being with women, we lose who we are.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. So what are other things, Lonnie, you have such an extensive background in midwifery. What do you see as COVID? Do you see it's a blessing of awareness of midwifery, or do you feel like it's more of a stress that the profession may or may not be able to handle? I would love your perspective on where you see midwifery going the next few years.
Well, I see midwifery as growing. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I can't wait until next summer because my daughter graduates.
She's finishing nurse midwifery school. How exciting.
Oh, she became a nurse. She worked for many years, 7 years at a high-tech hospital. And she said to me, she came away, she was in labor and delivery room nurse. She came away, she said, Mommy, if I didn't know you, if you weren't my mother, I wouldn't know that birth could be normal because it's not normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody gets Pitocin, everybody gets an epidural, everybody gets interventions. So she went back to school. She yeah. went to the Thomas Jefferson Educational Program.
Excellent program. Yep.
She's finishing up.
Love it.
You know, and of course we take lots of students here. We have lots of students. We have students from all over, from Rutgers, from Georgetown, from Yale, Frontier.
Wonderful.
Yeah, loads of students.
Yeah. Well, and if we don't expose the next generation, and not just midwives and potential midwives, but just the next generation of kids and the upbringing to normal, what are we gonna get lost? And we'll be like Brazil with the 90, 95% C-section rate, where vaginal delivery, let alone pushing midwifery, but just vaginal delivery and birthing anywhere but a C-section is looked at as an outlier hippie, you know? It's a cultural shift that happens.
They got to see the complications. You know, nothing happens. Interventions, there are complications with interventions. So you have to be careful that you don't fall into that trap.
Right. Yeah. And I did my thesis for midwifery school on the informed consent of epidurals, because it was, I would hear it in labor and delivery over and over again. Oh, it's totally safe. It's totally fine. I'm like, you're not giving her informed consent. This is not how that works. And it's interesting, just like people, you could, I empower and advocate for choices, but they need to have all the options and understanding the choice that they're picking.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Lonnie, I would love to just end on a plug of words of wisdom, inspiration to any midwife that's watching this. What would you be a takeaway to help inspire and empower them to keep fighting the fight wherever they're at?
Trust, trust, trust midwifery, trust women. You know, allow women to have babies. They will. They will have babies. And also, I would include in your practice to make it economically viable, get as much skill as you can. You know, we got certified in ultrasonography. We do early ultrasounds. You know, we repeat ultrasounds to verify presentation. You know, we do non-stress tests in the office. The more education you get, the more ability to do add into your practice, the more financially viable you are.
Yeah, the revenue streams, and not having it so dependent on the birth side that you may or may not be able to control if half the people end up with high risk and going to the physician and you're dependent on insurance, it makes you more vulnerable as a business entity. So the more revenue streams you can have.
Gynecology, yep. Gynecology. We do a lot of menopause counseling, bioidentical hormones, you know, prescribing. And what happens is, oh, I went to this midwife and she was terrific. And she gave me, you know, she told me to use this lubricant and she told me to take this medicine. And, you know, and it's so great. I had one of the doctors at the hospital that I practice in. She was the director of the dental and oral surgery component of the hospital. And she came to me and she said she couldn't have sex with her husband. And I put her on bioidentical hormones. And she calls me up a couple of weeks later and said, you know, you saved my marriage. You saved my life. So believing in midwifery and practicing full scope practice is real important in helping women, not only, you know, when they're having babies, but when they throughout the life cycle.
Yeah. I think that's the advantage when you're more of an entrepreneur. You get to not have so much a job description. You get to decide, do I want to do primary care? Do I want to do teenagers and contraception? Do I want to do heavy OB?
Yes,
Do I
we
want
do
to
all
do.
of that.
Yeah, you
We
get to
do
do is
all of
all of it. So I think sometimes getting midwives to be inspired, you can choose what kind of services you want to offer within your midwifery. Yeah. Yeah.
We're
Well,
doing
thank you.
everything. We're
Yeah.
doing everything.
Yeah. Well, I'm
Okay.
excited. I'm going to put out a shout out, and one to two midwives. We're going to find you some young, feisty ladies. You said you already got one on your team, so we got to find you two more young, feisty ladies to take over your passion and drive. And Lonnie, I truly want to thank you for everything you've done for midwifery. I mean, it's a
Thank
ripple
you.
effect of all this hard work. And we get to honor and prosper from the level you've brought us up to. So thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, Lonnie.